The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio.
Aloha, this is Adam Asquith.
And this is Don Heacock.
Welcome to another version of Kauai Kai and Why, where we talk about the sustainable use of our island's fresh and marine resources. Where we talk with Kupuna and Kahuna. We're willing to share their mana'o about how to sustain our island community using our fresh and marine waters.
And in a broad brushstroke, we want to try to guide community-based sustainable development of all different kinds of aspects, from agriculture to forestry, et cetera, so that it has no negative impacts on our streams or our coral reefs.
And we remind folks that this is a call-in show, so if you do have questions, you can call in at 826-7771. We do have guests usually, and we have a guest today, so we would ask to give us a little bit of time, 15, 20 minutes, to download the mana'o of our guests before calling in with questions and comments. And today we have Bridget Baines Hammerquist, who's going to talk with us about some of the potential water quality issues associated with the proposed dairy in Maha'ulepu. Bridget, are you with us?
I am.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Aloha, Bridget.
Aloha, Don. It's my pleasure to help you and help Kauai any way I can.
Bridget, can you give us a little bit on your background, where you're from, how you came here, and how you got interested in this particular issue?
Sure. I was born actually on the Big Island before statehood, and came to Kauai when I was 17. My dad worked in the sugar industry, so he was shipped to Olokele Sugar at one point in time, and we all came here and always thought we'd go back to the Big Island, but we fell in love with Kauai.
Indeed, of course.
All of us. So we stayed, and my parents are now buried here in Kaloa, and our home. After the sugar plantation and Dad retired, we had a home at Welly Welly Tract.
Wow.
And I went away to school and had a career on the mainland, but always told my husband I would go home.
You know, some of our listeners, Bridget, might be thinking, why would we discuss agriculture when we focus on watersheds and streams and coral reefs, et cetera? And it's really because when we look at agriculture globally, it's the greatest interface between humans and the environment. In fact, it is the number one largest cause of non-point source or stormwater runoff pollution in the United States.
And without good water, you don't have good agriculture and you don't have healthy people.
That's exactly right. And our Hawaiian brothers and sisters that invented the Ahupua'a integrated watershed coral reef food production system, they realized that they could produce a lot of food without polluting the streams or the coral reefs. And they, in many ways, we're going to be going back to the future. But today we're going to discuss this proposed dairy. I know you've researched it a lot. I've seen you at most, if not all, the public meetings.
I think I have attended all of the public meetings, yes. I've been very interested in the dairy. And I think primarily my interest was piqued early when the news media started to tell us about the dairy, which didn't happen until the start of this year, because of the numbers of cows they were going to put into a relatively small parcel in Mahalapu Valley. And I thought, wow, how can you fit 2,000 cows on 500 acres and not have a big mess? So I started looking into it and going to the meetings and listening. And it's nice, the idea of having cows and milk, but it still has to be done in a way that keeps us and our land safe.
I know in the fact sheet that that I've seen from the dairy information they've included, they say that the farm was designed using setbacks, native plants, and fencing to protect all drainage ditches and keep the water clean. But I've been unable to find any drainage study, any percolation studies, or anything that will assure the community at large that that will keep the manure in the fields?
Well, that's been my problem as well, because stuff travels, especially when it gets hit by a lot of rain, and it liquefies, and it contaminates groundwaters without, I mean, you can keep the cows away a little bit, but what they put into the soil leaches back into the clean water. And I had a contact this morning with Paul Achitoff, who's an attorney with Earth Justice.
Yes.
And on his own, because of concerns from citizens on Kauai, he met with Kyle Data of Hawaii Dairy Farms. And he presented some of the concerns and questions we have of this very nature. What's going to happen? How will the waters be kept clean? And this morning he informed me that he really didn't get answers yet. So he's interested. Earth Justice is interested. It's something they have to answer, and I don't think that's been answered. They did not do soil drainage studies, and they really haven't done a stormwater drainage study. They have not involved a hydrologist, and when we started looking at their plan, they weren't even using rainfall numbers that were correct. There is a gauge in Mahalapu, and it's actually identified in their plan, the number of the gauge. So I was able to call the U.S. Weather Service and ask, is it possible to get a copy of what's been recorded for Mahalapu Valley? The gentleman I spoke with, the state hydrologist, his name is Kevin Kodama, was very helpful. And he said, oh, yes, for that gauge, I have records dating back to 1982 already on an Excel spreadsheet. I said, oh, any chance we can see it? He said, no problem. I'll just send you a copy. And he did. So a group of us kind of got together and take a look at the spreadsheet, and we found much more rain than they put in their report that they were relying on to kind of assure government officials that all the cow manure and urine is not going to be a problem. They used a rainfall number of 1.89 inches. We found so many days where Mahalapu got more than 1.89 inches per day that that really raised our concern.
Well, Bridget, let me ask you a question. In their fact sheet, they say the Hawaii Dairy Farm was designed using historical rainfall data to accommodate extreme flooding, and that the cows will be rotated to allow for appropriate drainage and pasture rejuvenation. And yet, for extreme flooding, if I were going to build a bridge, for example, across a stream, I would build that bridge for a 100 or 250-year flood event. But apparently, did they use a 25-year flood event, or did they just say that?
No, they said they were going to use a 24-hour, meaning one day, rain experience of greatest proportion in the last 25 years. In other words, what has been our worst day, 24 hours, in the last 25 years? But they didn't do that.
Oh.
They actually reported to the state and county authorities that the number was 6.6 inches for designing their buildings. And then later in the same report, when they're talking about the potential for effluent pond runoff and drainage of manure and urine, maybe, you know, sloughing off their property to adjacent property or down onto Mahalapu Beach, they used the number 1.89 inches. When we started looking at the records, we found that there have been days, and not including the hurricane, you know, there have been days of 10.4 inches in 24 hours in Mahalapu. So if they want to take the greatest 24-hour rain event in the last 25 years, at least they have to use 10.4 inches. And so it was interesting to me. We then contacted the state, and we told the state that this number that they're using, it's not right. And when I went to the Lihue Business Association meeting, which was on Thursday, a week ago, yesterday, they acknowledged that they're having to recalculate based on 10.4 inches. So now in these effluent ponds, and those are ponds that are supposed to hold the manure and urine that they wash off the milking area and off the raceways. It's not going to do anything about holding what they put on the ground. They're going to leave that in the pastures. But what they wash off the milking area and the raceways is going to go to holding ponds. And so now, because they've had to use a new number, they're going to use more. They're not going to allow the ponds to get as full. They're going to say they have more freeboard space. That's the term they use. The difficulty I found is, in looking at this, when we have big rain events, it usually is in rainy season. So the ground is already pretty wet. And if you try to empty your holding tanks onto already saturated ground, it's not going to hold it. The other difficulty in that area is that the soil type, they didn't identify, correctly test and identify the soil type and its drainage capacity. They originally called the soil free-draining volcanic soil. But it's not. It's a clay-based soil. So very different. And I think maybe, Don, you were at the KCC meeting.
Yes, I was.
Yeah, the new manager proposed for this farm, got up and said, well, yeah, that's right. It is clay. But you know what? It's better because the stuff isn't going to percolate in as fast. It's going to sit on the top.
Which means when it rains hard, it'll likely run off.
Right. That's where we're coming from. It's like, okay, that's not really a help to have it sit on the top and percolate slowly. There's more risk that it's going to go down to the ocean, sicken the coral reefs, the sea life, people maybe who swim in the beach, maybe who swim in the beach downstream. There's a current, and you probably from your job know this better than me. But I think it goes right down to Poipu where there's lots of visitors.
Yeah, when we look at the history of let's just call it sewage, nutrient effluent, running into the water, South Kaneohe Bay in the 60s was a classic example of what you don't want to do. There was secondary and even sometimes raw sewage being discharged into Kaneohe Bay and the South Bay, and the wind, predominant trade winds, would blow it all into the corner, and the corals there were all virtually all sick and dead. One thing that we haven't talked about, Bridget, and I remember reading the article you wrote in the paper, was about the one thing that Hawaii Dairy Farm proposes is to use this New Zealand sustainable dairy model. I know you researched that. What did you find out about that model in New Zealand?
Well, using the term sustainable is a term of art in the industry of gardening and farming, and it has certain components. The dairy farms in New Zealand are not sustainable farms. They I think, try to use that term to make it sound more appealing.
Right.
But in fact, in New Zealand, they have had a nationwide disaster. And that's really the truth. And people can go and they can Google, and there's lots of sites. But as of the reports that came out in March of just this year, 60% of the clean water, the fresh water in New Zealand, is now unsafe for swimming in. And people can't even let their children go play in it. And they weren't like deliberately releasing manure and urine into the stream, but it's getting there through the ground.
That's right.
Through the proximity to ground waters. It moves.
Bridget,
it
can, just for our listeners' sake, that used to be called non-point source pollution. Now they're calling it polluted stormwater runoff.
Okay.
Which is probably more accurate.
And And Bridget, that degradation of the water quality in New Zealand is tied to those dairies? Is
yes.
that what you're saying?
Yes, they did the testing. There were people in other industries, well, even in the dairy industry, who said, oh, no, it's not us. But there was enough testing done, enough science done, and there is good people that have been working on this for years now in New Zealand because their experience goes back 19 years when New Zealand really got big on converting what used to be grass-fed sheep and beef industry to dairy industry. They did it to meet a demand from China and India. They converted these farms into milk-producing dairy farms. And they actually use more land per cow than what Hawaii Dairy Farms is proposing to use here. Much more, in fact. And still, with much more acreage per cow, they've had such huge problems that a guild was formed just last year, and the dairy guild is now working with governmental bodies and central government in New Zealand, and they're adopting new safeguards and protocols, and they're actually going to be keeping dairies away from rivers and streams and estuaries. They said they've got to do that. And they're trying hard to basically reclaim their clean water, but they acknowledge in these articles that it's going to be years to get it cleaned up.
You know, Bridget, I found the same thing when I did a Google search of not only the harm that intensive dairies are causing to rivers and streams in New Zealand, but I found the same thing was happening in the Netherlands, in Holland. And in Holland, they established a program called Caring Dairies that now defines sustainable farming, dairy farming, as the protection and improvement of the natural environment, improvement of animal welfare, and conditions of the local communities. Of course, that could have to do with air quality and water quality, of course. At the same time, being productive and efficient commercial farms. And I think that's a good definition of a sustainable farm, whether it's a dairy or not.
So Bridget, this is Adam. I want to just make sure that I understand it, and our listeners are clear. What you're saying is that Hawaii Dairy Farm is proposing to use the New Zealand model of intensive dairy operation. Yet in New Zealand, there are data clearly showing that model has caused the degradation of water quality throughout New Zealand. And then on top of that, the Hawaii dairy model is even more intense than anything that is being used in New Zealand.
That's correct. And they explained that the reason they feel it's safe to graze even more cows on the acreage that they have is because we have such great growing climate. They're confident their crop that they're going to feed the cows, 70% of the feed is grass-based, 30% of the feed is grain that they're going to import from off-island and feed them. They said if they can get local people to start producing the grain, they maybe will be able to get it from here down the stream. But now they know they have to buy it off-island. So they've got this plan, and they're focused on it's so beautiful and great climate, we're going to be able to grow the grass fast enough to justify putting 300 to 330 cows at a time on a fenced pasture that's only going to be between 2 and 3 acres. And that's a lot of cows in a small area. They're designing their farm to have 119 pads, and each of the pads are going to have electrified fencing to hold the cows in there for 4 to 6 hours at a time. So the plan is to put the cows out, and they're dealing with a herd of 1,880 to 2,000. So they're going to put 300 to 330 in 6 pads at a time for 4 to 6 hours, then rotate them to six more pads for 4 to 6 hours, and then one more time, 4 to 6 hours. So three rotations a day using six pads each time. So they're going to use a total of 18 pads per day of the 119 pads. When you look at that and think about the density, there is no other farm I could find anywhere that grazes at that density.
You know, to add to that also, as I remember from their fact sheet, we calculated about 200,000 pounds of waste based on this model per acre per year. 200,000 pounds of waste, that's manure and urine, per acre per year, which is approximately how much does taro farmers use, Adam, per acre per year? How many tons of organic fertilizer?
Well, I don't know about taro farm, but if you go to any kind of, you know, extension literature, historic or current, you know, the recommendation for cattle manure is something like 10 tons per acre per day, which is one-tenth of, about one-tenth of that.
And yet these are intensively grown crops,
right,
and constantly planted,
right,
and removed and planted and removed. So this appears to be a 10 times the fertilizing average rate of a farming, commercial intensive farming operation.
Yes.
So we considered the amount of manure per day from the 1,880 cows, and it is going to be close to 188,000 pounds a day, because at the most recent meeting they said it's at least 110 pounds of manure and urine per day per cow. And that 188,000 pounds is going to be, or 198,000 pounds, excuse me, is going to be spread over 18 parcels on a given day. So that's all going to be just in 18 2 to 3 acre parcels. So if you want to think about it by the day, it's 90 tons, 90 tons on 18 acres. And that's a lot. And what's going to keep it there was the thing I looked at. So we contacted dairy specialists and said, what do we need to look at? And they said, well, you need to look at, first they said that's way more than they've ever seen as far as the, what they call nutrient spread for the growth of the crop. In other words, the grass needs fertilizer, but that's a lot of fertilizer. But they said you need to consider the water, how much rain it gets, how much irrigation they're going to use, and then you can kind of get a picture on whether it will stay on the ground. That's one issue. So in exploring that, we get back to the rainfall. And when we use the numbers that are the real numbers for storm days, there's millions and millions of gallons. In fact, in a 10-inch rain day, there's 132 million gallons that fall on their acreage. And the way you can find that is if you look anywhere, 1 inch of rainfall represents 27,154 gallons of water on 1 acre. So if you take that information and you say, okay, what happens on a 10-inch day, you know you have 270,000 gallons on each acre, and then you can multiply that by the total farm, include everything, the 582 acres, and you get a number like 132 million gallons of water. And where is it going to go? It's going to run off. Is it going to take something with it? You bet. I mean, I asked dairy specialists, people who know about crops and grasses, and they said when the manure falls, it's at first, you know, kind of ammonia-based is a big part of it. That's what gives the really
right,
strong odor. But then in a couple days, it starts to break down. and the moisture starts coming out into the ground, because it is itself almost 70 to 80% moisture, plus you've got the urine, which is all moisture.
Right.
And it gets kind of slippery and slidey. And so in about 2 days' time, if you happen to have rainfall, even more than 2 inches, the stuff is going to start to move. And if you're in a rainy period like we're in now, where the ground is pretty well wet, a 10-inch day, I said to the Professor Kranz at the University of Nebraska, what is the hope for keeping it on the farm, this manure and urine that's, you know, building up every day, every day, every day as they rotate these guys through? The manure doesn't go away. The grass, he said, is not likely going to eat that much. It's way so much nutrient. They call the manure and urine nutrient. There's way too much nutrient on that small, those small pads. He said, it's not going to stay in place. There's no hope of it staying in place. It's going to wash off.
I know, Bridget, at the Lihue Business Association meeting, someone in the audience asked Doyle, I can't remember his title. He's not farm manager. I think he's a consultant. The person asked him, what will happen if they have a very large storm event and lots of nutrients flow into the stream and into the coral reef? And his response was, well, we'll have to deal with it then. But from a coral reef perspective, that's too late. You could have major mortalities cause. Corals aren't like fish. They can't swim away from the pollutants. They could be buried, and it could take many, many decades for them to recover.
And my concern, Don, is from a biology standpoint, there's E. coli and other serious bacteria that come with that waste.
That's true. We know that cows, for example, are carriers of leptospirosis. It's when they urinate, they basically release many thousands, if not millions, of these spirochete bacteria. And it's that there have been a number of studies done in Hawaii with cattle, pigs, goats that are all carriers of this disease. It's basically it enters most people through cuts or abrasions in their skin.
Right. If you go swimming.
That's right.
I have a medical background, and if you go swimming, right. When you have any break in your skin at all, then you can get infected.
It, in fact, is probably the greatest risk of swimmers in not just our freshwaters. The leptospirosis bacteria, which is a spirochete, can live in salt water for 4 to 5 days. So if we were swimming in the river mouth and then we decided to take a dip out in the ocean to wash off anything, it can survive there as well in nearshore marine waters.
And that was my point about talking about the whole coastline going down to Poipu Beach, where our tourist visitors and our kama'aina love to go and play and swim. What's going to be in those waters?
Right. I think one of the big themes I hear here or have thought about is that all of us want to see sustainable agriculture, that's ecological agriculture, that's sound. It makes money. It doesn't harm anyone or the environment. We need more of that. It's in our state constitution. We're supposed to strive to be self-sufficient. But we don't want to see agriculture that pollutes our streams or kills our reefs.
So I want to, this is Adam Asquith. I want to remind everyone we're listening to KKCR. This is Kauai Kai and Why with Adam Asquith and Don Heacock. And we're speaking with Bridget Baines Hammerquist today, who is a Koloa resident and has issues regarding the potential water quality problems that might arise from the Hawaii Dairy Farm proposed dairy project out there. And again, this is the call-in show. We've been listening to some of Bridget's concerns, and if people have some questions or comments, they can call in at 826-7771.
And just to qualify that, Adam, I think Bridget's concern, she's done very good job of researching it. It's not I just have a concern. She's documented that there are some serious problems that may occur if we don't address some of these issues further.
Yeah, I think the most compelling is that the model that the dairy is based on in its place of origin, New Zealand, has been well documented to at least have been linked to degraded water quality in New Zealand.
It has, and there's numerous articles about it. We actually furnished the information to the county and to the state because we don't feel that we should have to go through here what they've spent the last 20 years coming to understand. In other words, I don't think anybody intended the harm when they started, but the harm became really obvious within the first 10 years. And then basically this one article I read said they spent the next 10 years getting the dairy industry on board to recognize that their cows really are the source of the problem and they need the dairy people to help. And what they're doing is, you know, that whole idea about sustainable is a balance. You have to have the economic drive, the interest to make money, not be done at the cost of the environment or at any cost. It has to be done in a way that preserves the environment, because ultimately if the environment gets polluted enough, they're not going to be able to do the dairy farm either. It's going to impact. The cows are going to get sick. The milk is going to get contaminated. And all this wonderful, what they refer to in New Zealand as white gold. That's how they call milk down there, because they've been making so much money on it. All this white gold is going to dry up. And that's why I feel so passionate about the fact that if there's been their experience, let's learn from it. Let's not duplicate it. Let's reduce the volume of what they're proposing and put it in a place that doesn't put our precious beaches and our waterways at risk. I mean, Lord knows the Hawaiians don't need to lose another beach, and Mahaulepu is one of the few places you can go that's really still pretty much in a natural state.
Yeah, that's true. I know when Jim Maragos did the Kauai Coastal Resource Atlas, he's a marine biologist, this would have been 1986, he said the biomass of fish was the highest he had seen almost anywhere in the state, but definitely on Kauai off of the Mahaulepu coastline. And he did the whole island of Kauai and et cetera. You know, something you just said made me think, when you go back and look at the Netherlands sustainable dairy model called Caring Dairy, in their introduction, they emphatically state that interest in sustainable farming systems, including dairy farms, is growing rapidly in the Netherlands and throughout Europe as a result of a desire to increase farm income, the occurrence of animal diseases like foot and mouth and mad cow disease, and concerns about animal welfare and all the environmental problems that have been caused by agriculture, stormwater runoff, associated nutrients and pesticides, and soil erosion. So this isn't anything new. But in fact, the ones that have designed them appropriately with lower stocking density, especially ones that have manure going into methane digester, so you're converting that methane to CO2, which is 14 times less harmful to the as a greenhouse gas. Then they can produce their own energy. They don't have to use fossil fuels anymore, because methane digester will produce a phenomenal amount of electricity. But what I find absolutely staggering is that they've been planning this for 5 or 6 years already, and we still don't have some of the basic answers on soil percolation and stormwater runoff. Those that can all be modeled through hydraulic models.
Yes, it is. It's really concerning disconcerting because you would think they said they're investing $17 million in this project, and I know from a letter that was sent to one of the island's entomologists. They still don't know how they're going to control their flies.
Bridget, apparently we have a caller.
We have a caller with a question. I'd like to also tell you that you can, for our listeners, you can always email us a question at dj@kkcr.org, dj@kkcr.org, if you have a question you'd like to ask online.
Please, caller, go ahead.
Try it again. Aloha, caller, you're on the air? Try it again here. Aloha, caller, you're on the air?
Did we lose them?
They may have washed downstream.
Yeah.
Is our guest still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Okay, Bridget. We'll just wait. Hopefully they'll call back.
Apparently, I think they're on hold for a while. So.
Yeah. Okay. So, Bridget, this is Adam again. I'd like to ask you about the review process for this project. We theoretically, we have kind of checks and balances to make sure our large agricultural activities are safe and sustainable and don't pollute the environment. My understanding is that this project has a conservation plan that has been reviewed by the Soil and Water Conservation Districts on Kauai, which is the body that has been put together to review these plans. Is that correct?
Yes. But, you know, Adam, their review is only as good as the information they're given. And that's where we really felt compelled to get involved and to write the state. And I've also made sure that the letter went to the West Kauai Soil and Water Conservation District, because if they aren't given the right rainfall information, if they're being told that 1.89 inches is what, you know, is going to be the kind of day experience of the valley when they're the issue of, is there going to be runoff? Do you have enough room in your effluent ponds to hold what's being washed out of the milking area and what drains into the ponds too? There's drains through the property, and they're going to run some of those to the effluent pond. So if it's raining, it becomes the issue is, like, is the pond big enough to hold it? So if they present to the West Kauai Soil and Water Conservation District the wrong numbers, well, anything that they do is going to be based on what they're given. And then, you know, they assume that they're getting a presentation from professionals who have done their homework and who have, you know, they are looking at people that they believe are going to help to preserve the environment. And part of it, too, I think, comes with the fact that Ulupono Initiative, which is funded by billionaire Pierre Omidyar, has a community side, a philanthropic side, and they are funding a lot of organizations to improve the quality of life amongst the Hawaiian people and in different ways. So I think they came in the door with kind of a good persona, good impression, and I don't think people thought that they wouldn't be giving them the right information. But they have admitted that they misstated their soil type, they misreported the rainfall data, and they didn't do a comprehensive stormwater drainage plan.
You know, also, if I may interject, I did see a letter that a farmer from Kauai wrote to Ulupono about a small-scale, highly integrated dairy. And the letter that he got back basically said, I'm sorry, we don't fund small family-run farms. We're an investment firm. And when you go back and look at the International Assessment of Sustainable Agriculture, Knowledge, Science, and Technology for Sustainable Development, called Agriculture at a Crossroads, that was done recently by the United Nations and many others, they focus that the only way we're going to feed people sustainably in the long run, intergenerational, is through small family-run farms where they grow lots of different high diversity of products, animals and plants integrated together, where your biodiversity is very high, your system produces and provides habitat for endangered species, et cetera, et cetera. They claim that is the only way we're going to feed the world. In the old monoculture systems, where we only grow one thing, is really going to become a thing of the past and is not sustainable. And they give a... So readers that want to read more about that, just Google agriculture at a crossroads. 160 globally known, scientifically renowned scientists wrote that.
Bridget, in your research, I guess particularly on the New Zealand dairies and the issues they're having down there, are they implementing mitigation measures and techniques?
They are.
And I mean, you know, could some of those be used here to modify the dairy plan that would protect our waters and still allow us to produce, you know, intensively produce milk here?
Yes, I think that one of the biggest things is they've learned that it's not safe to put the dairies in the proximity of rivers, streams, and estuaries. In other words, where the river goes into the ocean. So the location of the proposed dairy in Mahalapu Valley is really not compliant with what they've learned or what they're now requiring of their own dairies. They are not allowing any new dairies to go in along the ocean and for, or the rivers, and for those that are already there, they're moving back.
Okay, so that's the number one issue, is just don't allow dairies to go in near water bodies where you get potential runoff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they have, you know, they've had storms there. They've actually had, I know I met one couple here on island. They go to New Zealand for 2 months every year, and they have done that for the last 30 years. And they've been there when animals have been washed into the ocean, and they're floating. They're seen floating out to sea.
I assume you mean dairy animals?
Yes.
You know, Bridget, we need to take just a break for a second. We've got a caller that called in and probably has a question for you. Please, caller, go ahead.
Hello.
You're going to need to turn down your radio, caller.
My radio's off.
Okay. You have a question?
Yes. I have sort of a question, sort of a statement.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, one thing is that I haven't done enough research, so I'm not for or against yet, but we say the New Zealand sustainable, and we're talking about the whole country. The whole country is not using this plan, so I'll just state that off. And then my other thing is we're concerned about the future runoff and the health of the waters when almost every North Shore river and stream has human waste present 24/7, and we're doing absolutely nothing about that. We're not warning our visitors. The Wainiha stream is horrible. People swim in the bay there. There's no warnings.
Your point is a good point, and it is something that should be addressed because there is a lot of bacteria and the potential for contamination. But you know, the interesting thing I found in doing the research on this is that human waste, raw sewage from humans, is not nearly as harmful as raw manure and urine from cows. I didn't know that. But there's,
I didn't know that either.
There is a study that came out of Wisconsin, and for any of your listeners that want, Don, I'm happy to share the sources. But it's on the Internet, and you know what you can do to find it? If you Google the term toxicity of cow manure, okay? This research was done for some period of time, and what they reported was that raw manure and urine are up to 160 times more toxic than raw municipal sewage. So I know that when we went to the Lihue Business Association meeting, Doyle Waybright did say, when somebody asked him, what happens if it spills? What happens if it flows to the sea? He said, well, we'll just have to deal with it. And people in the audience went, what do you mean we'll have to deal with it? He said, well, what do you do when there's a municipal sewage spill? You know, you wait till it clears out. You maybe close a beach or two, but you wait. But this is not the same. I mean, when you look at something that's reported as up to 160 times more toxic.
Well, the Wainiha stream on a day in and day out has 100 times the bacteria count that any beach on the mainland would be shut down for. And there's no signs, no reporting or anything. There's 100 times more than what would close a beach on the mainland, and nobody's doing anything about it.
Have you contacted the clean water people in Honolulu?
Surfrider is on it. They're doing the testing on a regular basis, and nobody's listening to them. Nobody's doing anything. Surfrider is testing on their own at night in the dark like it's supposed to be there's not degradation of the samples, et cetera. And every time they do a reading, it's 100 times more than what would shut down a beach on the mainland.
Well, you know, we have a biologist on island, Dr. Carl Berg, and I know he's doing a study right now. He's working on it with Department of Health Clean Water, and he also is a member of Surfrider. So I think that they are bringing the state on board. If that helps you feel better, there is a big effort being made right now, and I do think they will address that. And I think that's really what we're trying to do here.
Well, thank you for your help and your effort.
Yeah.
Yeah, caller.
By trying to prevent something in the future. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you, caller.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Do we have another call?
No.
So, yeah, you know, I want to thank the caller for bringing that up, and it points out how complicated the water quality issues are, and that you could have, as he points out, either in Wainiha, or you might have sediment coming out of a stream system. That sediment may not be toxic to humans, but sediment load is certainly toxic to corals that might be on the reef outside that system. Likewise, you might have crystal clear water in front of a county restroom facility in Hanalei Bay that is not toxic to the corals, but it may have high bacteria counts coming out of that leach field of that bathroom. So it's very, very complicated. In some instances, like the bacteria count and its potential for human toxicity, we do have regulations. The Department of Health is involved in other types of the pollution, let's say phosphorus levels, for example,
right,
that might come out from an agriculture area. We don't really have good monitoring programs for those right now. I think we have another caller, Bridget. Can we take that?
Caller, go ahead, please.
Hi, good morning, good afternoon. This is Victoria. I'm a gardener. And I'm gardening in a garden overlooking Pila'a Reef. And those of us that are living on this island know that Anini Reef is the largest reef in the Hawaiian island chain. It is also, I believe, 80% dead. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, great. So 80% dead, that means there's 20% of our biggest reef in the Hawaiian Islands that's still alive. And I believe that it is known that the major reason the runoffs from the hotels, the homes, all along this coastline that are dumping the pesticides that they spray on all of their gardens to keep their gardens green. So there are other ways to do that naturally. We don't have to use all that stuff. We don't have to lose the last 20% of the reef that we have living. If we lose the corals, it means all of those reef fish, all the maninis that we're all catching right now, are going to be gone because they eat the limu that live on the corals right here. We lose the corals, we lose so much of our fish life and so much more. We can't swim in it. You're not going to be able to swim at some point soon, you know? So we have to take a look at that, and we have to say to ourselves, okay, we're in a position right now where we can do a couple things. We can let them go ahead and dump the cow manure in the ocean, or we can stop it before it starts. I think that's the key. I think we need to all get our asses off and get them in gear and say no before it starts, because once it starts, it's too late. You know there's going to be a spill. You know there's going to be crap going into the ocean. You know we're going to have to clean it up. And by that time, that 20% that we're all enjoying that I'm looking at right now, overlooking, and it looks beautiful. It looks beautiful from the surface. But you can see where the streams run into the ocean, and I can see them very clearly now because it's been raining, and you can see the brown from sediment. Now, along with the sediment goes all the crap. So let's nip it in the bud. Let's let the Hawaiian people that have had their beautiful waters, so beautiful up until very recently because those Howleys have really screwed it up, take some care this time and stop it before that dairy starts. Those guys are only in it for the money. Forget the money, you guys. We need to eat. We need to swim. Forget about the money and get those guys to another planet to put a dairy on the moon.
Thank you, caller. Thank you. We appreciate that perspective. And it brings up an important point, Bridget, as to if there are other people out there who share the concerns about water quality from this particular proposed facility, you know, how can they – what avenues are there to improve the project and lessen the potential impact?
Well, I think the point that she made, you know, when she raised the issue about the resorts that are nearby, is that's the whole issue. You can't get something that is so toxic so close to the water. I mean, there are pastures and inland acreages on the island and more acreage. So I think moving it to another area where it's not going to be so close and so much right there to do its damage. So move it to a safer area and keep those cows on more land. They have to pay a higher lease payment maybe, but, you know, if they have more land, as Professor Kranz taught me, then you have a better spreading of the manure, something the ground can handle, because we talked about the manure breaks down, you know, after a couple of days. It changes the chemical composition. It gets higher in phosphorus, higher in nitrate. That's a problem that they have in New Zealand. They actually have their soils so high in nitrate and phosphorus that their cows are starting to get sick from the grass grown in it. So it is a cycle, like Don was talking about. It is, you know, the cows eat it, the cows make the milk, the cows poop. The land is affected, so if you don't have enough land to spread this stuff out over to be safely absorbed, processed, and degrade, then the very product they're making is not going to be good.
Yeah, so and we have lots and lots of open, relatively unused agricultural land on Kauai still. Fortunately, that's good for us.
Yes, it is good for us. I mean, because of the attractiveness of the ocean, most of Kauai is not far from the shore.
Right.
But inland there are, and I really, when I started looking at this, I thought, are they just there to get close to a roadway? Are they wanting to soothe the cows at night with the sound of the ocean? I mean, you know, I don't know what the motivation is, because they went to New Zealand. They said they studied the New Zealand model. They modified it. They're doing it in a more intense fashion here than is done in New Zealand. But if they studied it, why didn't they include in any of their presentations the fact that New Zealand has a big problem and nationwide they're taking steps now to try to clean up the problem? I found it very unsettling that they didn't disclose that. And I think a responsible corporation about to run a business is really being deceitful if they come to you and say, we've been there. This country is successful in their production of milk. We've studied their model and we're putting it in. And then out of the other side of their mouth, they kind of keep it closed. They keep quiet about the fact, oh, and they have a real problem in their backyard. But we don't need to talk about that. So I think that it would have been much more prudent for them, more pono, to go down there and truly study it, figure out the fix, and come back and say, milk production is really high, but they've had a serious problem.
But here's what we're going to do to make sure it doesn't happen here.
That's
in other
right.
words, have the fix all worked out when they make their presentation. But at all of their presentations and in all of the documents, we could find that they had filed with the reviewing bodies the fact of the problem or a fix for the problem. That's nowhere. It's just under the rug somewhere. It's hiding. And that's not Pono.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the take-home, one of the take-home messages might be that we need to, as we promote agriculture on our ag lands, which we have a lot of since the plantations went down, you know, we need to make sure that there's a review process that promotes the sustainability and protects our nearshore waters and fresh
That's
waters,
right.
Because all ag is not necessarily equal, and intensive industrial scale agriculture comes with environmental ramifications. So as we promote this, we need to make sure that we protect those other resources at the same time.
That's right. Yeah, for an example, there are agricultural sustainability assessments that can be done on the design of a project. The ability to reach sustainability is all in the design. The more time you design it and the better you research the subject, the better chance you can truly design.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio.
Aloha, this is Adam Asquith.
And this is Don Heacock.
Welcome to another version of Kauai Kai and Why, where we talk about the sustainable use of our island's fresh and marine resources. Where we talk with Kupuna and Kahuna. We're willing to share their mana'o about how to sustain our island community using our fresh and marine waters.
And in a broad brushstroke, we want to try to guide community-based sustainable development of all different kinds of aspects, from agriculture to forestry, et cetera, so that it has no negative impacts on our streams or our coral reefs.
And we remind folks that this is a call-in show, so if you do have questions, you can call in at 826-7771. We do have guests usually, and we have a guest today, so we would ask to give us a little bit of time, 15, 20 minutes, to download the mana'o of our guests before calling in with questions and comments. And today we have Bridget Baines-Hammerquist, who's going to talk with us about some of the potential water quality issues associated with the proposed dairy in Maha'ulepu. Bridget, are you with us?
I am.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Aloha, Bridget.
Aloha, Don. It's my pleasure to help you and help Kauai any way I can.
Bridget, can you give us a little bit on your background, where you're from, how you came here, and how you got interested in this particular issue?
Sure. I was born actually on the Big Island before statehood, and came to Kauai when I was 17. My dad worked in the sugar industry, so he was shipped to Olokele Sugar at one point in time, and we all came here and always thought we'd go back to the Big Island, but we fell in love with Kauai.
Indeed.
Of course.
All of us. So we stayed, and my parents are now buried here in Kaloa, and our home... After the sugar plantation and Dad retired, we had a home at Welly Welly Tract.
Wow.
And I went away to school and had a career on the mainland, but always told my husband I would go home.
You know, some of our listeners, Bridget, might be thinking, why would we discuss agriculture when we focus on watersheds and streams and coral reefs, et cetera? And it's really because when we look at agriculture globally, it's the greatest interface between humans and the environment. In fact, it is the number one largest cause of non-point source or stormwater runoff pollution in the United States.
And without good water, you don't have good agriculture and you don't have healthy people.
That's exactly right. And our Hawaiian brothers and sisters that invented the Ahupua'a integrated watershed coral reef food production system, they realized that they could produce a lot of food without polluting the streams or the coral reefs. And they, in many ways, we're going to be going back to the future. But today we're going to discuss this proposed dairy. I know you've researched it a lot. I've seen you at most, if not all, the public meetings.
I think I have attended all of the public meetings, yes. I've been very interested in the dairy. And I think primarily my interest was piqued early when the news media started to tell us about the dairy, which didn't happen until the start of this year, because of the numbers of cows they were going to put into a relatively small parcel in Mahalapu Valley. And I thought, wow, how can you fit 2,000 cows on 500 acres and not have a big mess? So I started looking into it and going to the meetings and listening. And it's nice, the idea of having cows and milk, but it still has to be done in a way that keeps us and our land safe.
I know in the fact sheet that that I've seen from the dairy information they've included, they say that the farm was designed using setbacks, native plants, and fencing to protect all drainage ditches and keep the water clean. But I've been unable to find any drainage study, any percolation studies, or anything that will assure the community at large that will keep the manure in the fields.
Well, that's been my problem as well, because stuff travels, especially when it gets hit by a lot of rain, and it liquefies and it contaminates groundwaters without, I mean, you can keep the cows away a little bit, but what they put into the soil leaches back into the clean water. And I had a contact this morning with Paul Achitoff, who's an attorney with Earth Justice.
Yes.
And on his own, because of concerns from citizens on Kauai, he met with Kyle Data of Hawaii Dairy Farms. And he presented some of the concerns and questions we have of this very nature. What's going to happen? How will the waters be kept clean? And this morning he informed me that he really didn't get answers yet. So he's interested. Earth Justice is interested. It's something they have to answer, and I don't think that's been answered. They did not do soil drainage studies, and they really haven't done a stormwater drainage study. They have not involved a hydrologist. And when we started looking at their plan, they weren't even using rainfall numbers that were correct. There is a gauge in Mahalapu, and it's actually identified in their plan, the number of the gauge. So I was able to call the U.S. Weather Service and ask, is it possible to get a copy of what's been recorded for Mahalapu Valley? The gentleman I spoke with, the state hydrologist, his name is Kevin Kodama, was very helpful. And he said, oh, yes, for that gauge, I have records dating back to 1982, already on an Excel spreadsheet. I said, oh, any chance we can see it? He said, no problem. I'll just send you a copy. And he did. So a group of us kind of got together and take a look at the spreadsheet, and we found much more rain than they put in their report that they were relying on to kind of assure government officials that all the cow manure and urine is not going to be a problem. They used a rainfall number of 1.89 inches. We found so many days where Mahalapu got more than 1.89 inches per day that really raised our concern.
Well, Bridget, let me ask you a question. In their fact sheet, they say the Hawaii Dairy Farm was designed using historical rainfall data to accommodate extreme flooding, and that the cows will be rotated to allow for appropriate drainage and pasture rejuvenation. And yet, for extreme flooding, if I were going to build a bridge, for example, across a stream, I would build that bridge for a 100 or 250-year flood event. But apparently, did they use a 25-year flood event, or did they just say that?
No, they said they were going to use a 24-hour, meaning one day, rain experience of greatest proportion in the last 25 years. In other words, what has been our worst day, 24 hours, in the last 25 years? But they didn't do that.
Oh.
They actually reported to the state and county authorities that the number was 6.6 inches for designing their buildings. And then later in the same report, when they're talking about the potential for effluent pond runoff and drainage of manure and urine, maybe, you know, sloughing off their property to adjacent property or down onto Mahalapu Beach, they used the number 1.89 inches. When we started looking at the records, we found that there have been days, and not including the hurricane, you know, there have been days of 10.4 inches in 24 hours in Mahalapu. So if they want to take the greatest 24-hour rain event in the last 25 years, at least they have to use 10.4 inches. And so it was interesting to me. We then contacted the state, and we told the state that this number that they're using, it's not right. And when I went to the Lihue Business Association meeting, which was on Thursday, a week ago, yesterday, they acknowledged that they're having to recalculate based on 10.4 inches. So now in these effluent ponds, and those are ponds that are supposed to hold the manure and urine that they wash off the milking area and off the raceways. It's not going to do anything about holding what they put on the ground. They're going to leave that in the pastures. But what they wash off the milking area and the raceways is going to go to holding ponds. And so now, because they've had to use a new number, they're going to use more. They're not going to allow the ponds to get as full. They're going to say they have more freeboard space. That's the term they use. The difficulty I found is, in looking at this, when we have big rain events, it usually is in rainy season. So the ground is already pretty wet. And if you try to empty your holding tanks onto already saturated ground, it's not going to hold it. The other difficulty in that area is that the soil type, they didn't identify, correctly test and identify the soil type and its drainage capacity. They originally called the soil free-draining volcanic soil. But it's not. It's a clay-based soil. So very different. And I think maybe, Don, you were at the KCC meeting.
Yes, I was.
Yeah, the new manager proposed for this farm, got up and said, well, yeah, that's right, it is clay, but you know what? It's better because the stuff isn't going to percolate in as fast. It's going to sit on the top.
Which means when it rains hard, it'll likely run off.
Right. That's where we're coming from. It's like, okay, that's not really a help to have it sit on the top and percolate slowly. There's more risk that it's going to go down to the ocean, sicken the coral reefs, the sea life, people maybe who swim in the beach, maybe who swim in the beach downstream. There's a current, and you probably from your job know this better than me. But I think it goes right down to Poipu where there's lots of visitors.
Yeah, when we look at the history of let's just call it sewage, nutrient effluent, running into the water. South Kaneohe Bay in the 60s was a classic example of what you don't want to do. There was secondary and even sometimes raw sewage being discharged into Kaneohe Bay and the South Bay, and the wind, predominant trade winds, would blow it all into the corner, and the corals there were all virtually all sick and dead. One thing that we haven't talked about, Bridget, and I remember reading the article you wrote in the paper, was about the one thing that Hawaii Dairy Farms proposes is to use this New Zealand sustainable dairy model. I know you researched that. What did you find out about that model in New Zealand?
Well, using the term sustainable is a term of art in the industry of gardening and farming, and it has certain components. The dairy farms in New Zealand are not sustainable farms. They I think, try to use that term to make it sound more appealing.
Right.
But in fact, in New Zealand, they have had a nationwide disaster. And that's really the truth. And people can go and they can Google, and there's lots of sites. But as of the reports that came out in March of just this year, 60% of the clean water, the fresh water in New Zealand, is now unsafe for swimming in. And people can't even let their children go play in it. And they weren't like deliberately releasing manure and urine into the stream, but it's getting there through the ground.
That's right.
Through the proximity to ground waters. It moves.
Bridget,
it,
just for our listeners' sake, that used to be called non-point source pollution. Now they're calling it polluted stormwater runoff.
Okay.
Which is probably more accurate.
And Bridget, that degradation of the water quality in New Zealand is tied to those dairies?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes, they did the testing. There were people in other industries, well, even in the dairy industry, who said, oh, no, it's not us. But there was enough testing done, enough science done, and there is good people that have been working on this for years now in New Zealand, because their experience goes back 19 years when New Zealand really got big on converting what used to be grass-fed sheep and beef industry to dairy industry. They did it to meet a demand from China and India. They converted these farms into milk-producing dairy farms. And they actually use more land per cow than what Hawaii Dairy Farms is proposing to use here. Much more, in fact. And still, with much more acreage per cow, they've had such huge problems that a guild was formed just last year, and the dairy guild is now working with governmental bodies and central government in New Zealand, and they're adopting new safeguards and protocols, and they're actually going to be keeping dairies away from rivers and streams and estuaries. They said they've got to do that. And they're trying hard to basically reclaim their clean water, but they acknowledge in these articles that it's going to be years to get it cleaned up.
You know, Bridget, I found the same thing when I did a Google search of not only the harm that intensive dairies are causing to rivers and streams in New Zealand, but I found the same thing was happening in the Netherlands, in Holland. And in Holland, they established a program called Caring Dairies that now defines sustainable farming, dairy farming, as the protection and improvement of the natural environment, improvement of animal welfare, and conditions of the local communities. Of course, that could have to do with air quality and water quality, of course. At the same time, being productive and efficient commercial farms. And I think that's a good definition of a sustainable farm, whether it's a dairy or not.
So Bridget, this is Adam. I want to just make sure that I understand it, and our listeners are clear. What you're saying is that Hawaii Dairy Farm is proposing to use the New Zealand model of intensive dairy operation. Yet in New Zealand, there are data clearly showing that model has caused the degradation of water quality throughout New Zealand. And then on top of that, the Hawaii dairy model is even more intense than anything that is being used in New Zealand.
That's correct.
And they explained that the reason they feel it's safe to graze even more cows on the acreage that they have is because we have such great growing climate. They're confident their crop that they're going to feed the cows, 70% of the feed is grass-based, 30% of the feed is grain that they're going to import from off-island and feed them. They said if they can get local people to start producing the grain, they maybe will be able to get it from here down the stream. But now they know they have to buy it off-island. So they've got this plan, and they're focused on, it's so beautiful and great climate, we're going to be able to grow the grass fast enough to justify putting 300 to 330 cows at a time on a fenced pasture that's only going to be between 2 and 3 acres. And that's a lot of cows in a small area. They're designing their farm to have 119 pads, and each of the pads are going to have electrified fencing to hold the cows in there for 4 to 6 hours at a time. So the plan is to put the cows out, and they're dealing with a herd of 1,880 to 2,000. So they're going to put 300 to 330 in 6 pads at a time for 4 to 6 hours, then rotate them to 6 more pads for 4 to 6 hours, and then one more time, 4 to 6 hours. So 3 rotations a day using 6 pads each time. So they're going to use a total of 18 pads per day of the 119 pads. When you look at that and think about the density, there is no other farm I could find anywhere that grazes at that density.
You know, to add to that also, as I remember from their fact sheet, we calculated about 200,000 pounds of waste based on this model per acre per year. 200,000 pounds of waste, that's manure and urine, per acre per year, which is approximately how much does taro farmers use, Adam? Per acre per year? How many tons of organic fertilizer?
Well, I don't know about taro farm, but if you go to any kind of, you know, extension literature, historic or current, you know, the recommendation for cattle manure is something like 10 tons per acre per day, which is about one-tenth of that.
And yet these are intensively grown crops, right, and constantly planted, right, and removed and planted and removed. So this appears to be a 10 times the fertilizing average rate of a farming, commercial intensive farming operation.
Yes.
So we considered the amount of manure per day from the 1,880 cows, and it is going to be close to 188,000 pounds a day, because at the most recent meeting they said it's at least 110 pounds of manure and urine per day per cow. And that 188,000 pounds is going to be, or 198,000 pounds, excuse me, is going to be spread over 18 parcels on a given day. So that's all going to be just in 18 2- to 3-acre parcels. So if you want to think about it by the day, it's 90 tons on 18 acres. And that's a lot. And what's going to keep it there was the thing I looked at. So we contacted dairy specialists and said, what do we need to look at? And they said, well, you need to look at, first they said that's way more than they've ever seen as far as the what they call nutrient spread for the growth of the crop. In other words, the grass needs fertilizer, but that's a lot of fertilizer. But they said you need to consider the water, how much rain it gets, how much irrigation they're going to use, and then you can kind of get a picture on whether it will stay on the ground. That's one issue. So in exploring that, we get back to the rainfall.
And when we use the numbers that are the real numbers for storm days, there's millions and millions of gallons. In fact, in a 10-inch rain day, there's 132 million gallons that fall on their acreage. And the way you can find that is if you look anywhere, 1 inch of rainfall represents 27,154 gallons of water on 1 acre. So if you take that information and you say, okay, what happens on a 10-inch day, you know you have 270,000 gallons on each acre, and then you can multiply that by the total farm, include everything, the 582 acres. And you get a number like 132 million gallons of water. And where is it going to go? It's going to run off. Is it going to take something with it? You bet. I mean, I asked dairy specialists, people who know about crops and grasses, and they said when the manure falls, it's at first, you know, kind of ammonia-based is a big part of it. That's what gives the really strong odor. But then in a couple days, it starts to break down, and the moisture starts coming out into the ground because it is itself almost 70 to 80% moisture, plus you've got the urine, which is all moisture.
Right.
And it gets kind of slippery and slidey. And so in about 2 days' time, if you happen to have rainfall, even more than 2 inches, the stuff is going to start to move. And if you're in a rainy period like we're in now where the ground is pretty well wet, a 10-inch day, I said to the Professor Kranz at the University of Nebraska, what is the hope for keeping it on the farm, this manure and urine that's, you know, building up every day, every day, every day as they rotate these guys through? The manure doesn't go away. The grass, he said, is not likely going to eat that much. It's way so much nutrient. They call the manure and urine nutrient. There's way too much nutrient on that small, those small pads. He said it's not going to stay in place. There's no hope of it staying in place. It's going to wash off.
I know, Bridget, at the Lihue Business Association meeting, someone in the audience asked Doyle, I can't remember his title. He's not farm manager. I think he's a consultant. The person asked him, what will happen if they have a very large storm event and lots of nutrients flow into the stream and into the coral reef? And his response was, well, we'll have to deal with it then. But from a coral reef perspective, that's too late. You could have major mortalities caused. Corals aren't like fish. They can't swim away from the pollutants. They could be buried, and it could take many, many decades for them to recover.
And my concern, Don, is from a biology standpoint, there's E. coli and other serious bacteria that come with that waste.
That's true. We know that cows, for example, are carriers of leptospirosis. It's when they urinate, they basically release many thousands, if not millions, of these spirochete bacteria, and it's that there have been a number of studies done in Hawaii with cattle, pigs, goats that are all carriers of this disease. It's basically it enters most people through cuts or abrasions in their skin.
Right. If you go swimming.
That's right.
I have a medical background, and if you go swimming, right. When you have any break in your skin at all, then you can get infected.
It, in fact, is probably the greatest risk of swimmers in not just our freshwaters. The leptospirosis bacteria, which is a spirochete, can live in salt water for 4 to 5 days. So if we were swimming in the river mouth and then we decided to take a dip out in the ocean to wash off anything, it can survive there as well in nearshore marine waters.
And that was my point about talking about the whole coastline going down to Poipu Beach. where our tourist visitors and our kama'aina love to go and play and swim. What's going to be in those waters?
Right. I think one of the big themes I hear here or have thought about is that all of us want to see sustainable agriculture, that's ecological agriculture, that's sound. It makes money. It doesn't harm anyone or the environment. We need more of that. It's in our state constitution. We're supposed to strive to be self-sufficient. But we don't want to see agriculture that pollutes our streams or kills our reefs.
So I want to, this is Adam Asquith. I want to remind everyone we're listening to KKCR. This is Kauai Kai and Why with Adam Asquith and Don Heacock. And we're speaking with Bridget Baines Hammerquist today, who is a Koloa resident and is has issues regarding the potential water quality problems that might arise from the Hawaii Dairy Farm proposed dairy project out there. And again, this is the call-in show. We've been listening to some of Bridget's concerns, and if people have some questions or comments, they can call in at 826-7771.
And just to qualify that, Adam, I think Bridget's concern, she's done very good job of researching it. It's not, I just have a concern. She's documented that there are some serious problems that may occur if we don't address some of these issues further.
Yeah, I think the most compelling is that the model that the dairy is based on in its place of origin, New Zealand, has been well documented to at least have been linked to degraded water quality in New Zealand.
It has, and there's numerous articles about it. We actually furnished the information to the county and to the state because we don't feel that we should have to go through here what they've spent the last 20 years coming to understand. In other words, I don't think anybody intended the harm when they started, but the harm became really obvious within the first 10 years. And then basically this one article I read said they spent the next 10 years getting the dairy industry on board to recognize that their cows really are the source of the problem and they need the dairy people to help. And what they're doing is, you know, that whole idea about sustainable is a balance. You have to have the economic drive, the interest to make money, not be done at the cost of the environment, or at any cost. It has to be done in a way that preserves the environment, because ultimately, if the environment gets polluted enough, they're not going to be able to do the dairy farm either. It's going to impact, the cows are going to get sick, the milk is going to get contaminated, and all this wonderful, what they refer to in New Zealand as white gold, that's how they call milk down there, because they've been making so much money on it. All this white gold is going to dry up. And that's why I feel so passionate about the fact that if that's been their experience, let's learn from it. Let's not duplicate it. Let's reduce the volume of what they're proposing and put it in a place that doesn't put our precious beaches and our waterways at risk. I mean, Lord knows the Hawaiians don't need to lose another beach. And Mahaulepu is one of the few places you can go that's really still pretty much in a natural state.
Yeah, that's true. I know when Jim Maragos did the Kauai Coastal Resource Atlas, he's a marine biologist, this would have been 1986, he said the biomass of fish was the highest he had seen almost anywhere in the state, but definitely on Kauai, off of the Mahaulepu coastline. And he did the whole island of Kauai and et cetera. You know, something you just said made me think, when you go back and look at the Netherlands sustainable dairy model called Caring Dairy, in their introduction, they emphatically state that interest in sustainable farming systems, including dairy farms, is growing rapidly in the Netherlands and throughout Europe as a result of a desire to increase farm income, the occurrence of animal diseases like foot and mouth, and mad cow disease and concerns about animal welfare and all the environmental problems that have been caused by agriculture, stormwater runoff, associated nutrients and pesticides, and soil erosion. So this isn't anything new. But in fact, the ones that have designed them appropriately with lower stocking density, especially ones that have manure going into methane digesters, so you're converting that methane to CO2, which is 14 times less harmful to the as a greenhouse gas, then they can produce their own energy. They don't have to use fossil fuels anymore because methane digester will produce a phenomenal amount of electricity. But what I find absolutely staggering is that they've been planning this for 5 or 6 years already, and we still don't have some of the basic answers on soil percolation and stormwater runoff. Those that can all be modeled through hydraulic models.
Yes, it is. It's really concerning because and disconcerting because you would think they said they're investing $17 million in this project, and I know from a letter that was sent to one of the island's entomologists, they still don't know how they're going to control their flies.
Bridget, apparently we have a caller.
We have a caller with a question. I'd like to also tell you that you can, for our listeners, you can always email us a question at dj@kkcr.org, dj@kkcr.org, if you have a question you'd like to ask online.
Please, caller, go ahead.
Try it again. Aloha, caller, you're on the air? Try it again here. Aloha, caller, you're on the air?
Did we lose them?
They may have washed downstream.
Yeah.
Is our guest still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay,
Bridget. We'll just wait. Hopefully they'll call back.
Apparently, I think they're on hold for a while. So.
Yeah. Okay. So, Bridget, this is Adam again. I'd like to ask you about the review process for this project. We theoretically, we have kind of checks and balances to make sure our large agricultural activities are safe and sustainable and don't pollute the environment. My understanding is that this project has a conservation plan that has been reviewed by the Soil and Water Conservation Districts on Kauai, which is the body that has been put together to review these plans. Is that correct?
Yes. But, you know, Adam, their review is only as good as the information they're given, and that's where we really felt compelled to get involved and to write the state. And I've also made sure that the letter went to the West Kauai Soil and Water Conservation District, because if they aren't given the right rainfall information, if they're being told that 1.89 inches is what, you know, is going to be the kind of day experience of the valley when they're the issue of, is there going to be runoff? Do you have enough room in your effluent ponds to hold what's being washed out of the milking area and what drains into the ponds too? There's drains through the property, and they're going to run some of those to the effluent ponds. So if it's raining, it becomes the issue is like, is the pond big enough to hold it? So if they present to the West Kauai Soil and Water Conservation District the wrong numbers, well, anything that they do is going to be based on what they're given. And then, you know, they assume that they're getting a presentation from professionals who have done their homework and who have, you know, they are looking at people that they believe are going to help to preserve the environment. And part of it, too, I think, comes with the fact that Ulupono Initiative, which is funded by billionaire Pierre Omidyar, has a community side, a philanthropic side, and they are funding a lot of organizations to improve the quality of life amongst the Hawaiian people and in different ways. So I think they came in the door with kind of a good persona, good impression, and I don't think
people thought that they wouldn't be giving them the right information. But they have admitted that they misstated their soil type, they misreported the rainfall data, and they didn't do a comprehensive stormwater drainage plan.
You know, also, if I may interject, I did see a letter that a farmer from Kauai wrote to Ulupono about a small-scale, highly integrated dairy. And the letter that he got back basically said, I'm sorry, we don't fund small family-run farms. We're an investment firm. And when you go back and look at the International Assessment of Sustainable Agriculture, Knowledge, Science, and Technology for Sustainable Development, called Agriculture at a Crossroads, that was done recently by the United Nations and many others, they focus that the only way we're going to feed people sustainably in the long run, intergenerational, is through small family-run farms where they grow lots of different high diversity of products, animals and plants integrated together, where your biodiversity is very high, your system produces and provides habitat for endangered species, et cetera, et cetera. They claim that is the only way we're going to feed the world. In the old monoculture systems, where we only grow one thing, is really going to become a thing of the past and is not sustainable. And they give a... So readers that want to read more about that, just Google Agriculture at a Crossroads. 160 globally known, scientifically renowned scientists wrote that.
Bridget, in your research, I guess particularly on the New Zealand dairies and the issues they're having down there, are they implementing mitigation measures and techniques?
They are.
And I mean, you know, could some of those be used here to modify the dairy plan that would protect our waters and still allow us to produce, you know, intensively produce milk here?
Yes, I think that one of the biggest things is they've learned that it's not safe to put the dairies in the proximity of rivers, streams, and estuaries. In other words, where the river goes into the ocean. So the location of the proposed dairy in Mahalapu Valley is really not compliant with what they've learned or what they're now requiring of their own dairies. They are not allowing any new dairies to go in along the ocean and or the rivers, and for those that are already there, they're moving back.
Okay, so that's the number one issue, is just don't allow dairies to go in near water bodies where you get potential runoff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they have, you know, they've had storms there. They've actually had, I know I met one couple here on island. They go to New Zealand for 2 months every year, and they have done that for the last 30 years. And they've been there when animals have been washed into the ocean, and they're floating. They're seen floating out to sea.
I assume you mean dairy animals?
Yes.
You know, Bridget, we need to take just a break for a second. We've got a caller that called in and probably has a question for you. Please, caller, go ahead.
Hello.
You're going to need to turn down your radio, caller.
My radio's off.
Okay. You have a question?
Yes. I have sort of a statement.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, one thing is that I haven't done enough research, so I'm not for or against yet, but we say the New Zealand sustainable, and we're talking about the whole country. The whole country is not using this plan, so I'll just state that off. And then my other thing is we're concerned about the future runoff and the health of the waters when almost every North Shore river and stream has human waste present 24/7, and we're doing absolutely nothing about that. We're not warning our visitors. The Wainiha stream is horrible. People swim in the bay there. There's no warnings.
Your point is a good point. And it is something that should be addressed because there is a lot of bacteria and the potential for contamination. But you know, the interesting thing I found in doing the research on this is that human waste, raw sewage from humans, is not nearly as harmful as raw manure and urine from cows. I didn't know that. But there's,
I didn't know that either.
There is a study that came out of Wisconsin, and for any of your listeners that want, Don, I'm happy to share the sources. But it's on the Internet, and you know what you can do to find it? If you Google the term toxicity of cow manure, okay? This research was done for some period of time, and what they reported was that raw manure and urine are up to 160 times more toxic than raw municipal sewage. So I know that when we went to the Lihue Business Association meeting, Doyle Waybright did say, when somebody asked him, what happens if it spills? What happens if it flows to the sea? He said, well, we'll just have to deal with it. And people in the audience went, what do you mean we'll have to deal with it? He said, well, what do you do when there's a municipal sewage spill? You know, you wait till it clears out. You maybe close a beach or two, but you wait. But this is not the same. I mean, when you look at something that's reported as up to 160 times more toxic.
Well, the Waineha stream on a day in and day out has 100 times the bacteria count that any beach on the mainland would be shut down for. And there's no signs, no reporting or anything. There's 100 times more than what would close a beach on the mainland, and nobody's doing anything about it.
Have you contacted the clean water people in Honolulu?
Surfrider is on it. They're doing the testing on a regular basis, and nobody's listening to them. Nobody's doing anything. Surfrider is testing on their own at night in the dark like it's supposed to be there's not degradation of the samples, et cetera. And every time they do a reading, it's 100 times more than what would shut down a beach on the mainland.
Well, you know, we have a biologist on island, Dr. Carl Berg, and I know he's doing a study right now. He's working on it with Department of Health Clean Water, and he also is a member of Surfrider. So I think that they are bringing the state on board. If that helps you feel better, there is a big effort being made right now, and I do think they will address that. And I think that's really what we're trying to do here.
Well, thank you for your help and your effort.
Yeah.
Yeah, caller.
By trying to prevent something in the future. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you, caller.
Aloha.
Aloha. Do we have another call?
No.
So, yeah, you know, I want to thank the caller for bringing that up, and it points out how complicated the water quality issues are, and that you could have, as he points out, either in Waineha, or you might have sediment coming out of a stream system. That sediment may not be toxic to humans, but sediment load is certainly toxic to corals that might be on the reef outside that system. Likewise, you might have crystal clear water in front of a county restroom facility in Hanalei Bay that is not toxic to the corals, but it may have high bacteria counts coming out of that leach field of that bathroom. So it's very, very complicated. In some instances, like the bacteria count and its potential for human toxicity, we do have regulations. The Department of Health is involved in other types of the pollution, let's say phosphorus levels, for example,
right,
that might come out from an agriculture area. We don't really have good monitoring programs for those right now. I think we have another caller, Bridget. Can we take that?
Caller, go ahead, please.
Hi, good morning, good afternoon. This is Victoria. I'm a gardener. And I'm gardening in a garden overlooking Pila'a Reef. And those of us that are living on this island know that Anini Reef is the largest reef in the Hawaiian island chain. It is also, I believe, 80% dead. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, great. So 80% dead, that means there's 20% of our biggest reef in the Hawaiian Islands that's still alive.
And I believe that it is known that the reason, the major reason for runoffs from the hotels, the homes, all along this coastline that are dumping the pesticides that they spray on all of their gardens to keep their gardens green. So there are other ways to do that naturally. We don't have to use all that stuff. We don't have to lose the last 20% of the reef that we have living. If we lose the corals, it means all of those reef fish, all the maninis that we're all catching right now, are going to be gone because they eat the limu that live on the corals right here. We lose the corals, we lose so much of our fish life and so much more. We can't swim in it. You're not going to be able to swim at some point soon, you know? So we have to take a look at that, and we have to say to ourselves, okay, we're in a position right now where we can do a couple things. We can let them go ahead and dump the cow manure in the ocean, or we can stop it before it starts. I think that's the key. I think we need to all get our asses off and get them in gear and say no before it starts, because once it starts, it's too late. You know there's going to be a spill. You know there's going to be crap going into the ocean. You know we're going to have to clean it up. And by that time, that 20% that we're all enjoying that I'm looking at right now, overlooking, and it looks beautiful. It looks beautiful from the surface. But you can see where the streams run into the ocean, and I can see them very clearly now because it's been raining, and you can see the brown from sediment. Now, along with the sediment goes all the crap. So let's nip it in the bud. Let's let the Hawaiian people that have had their beautiful waters, so beautiful up until very recently because those howlies have really screwed it up, take some care this time and stop it before that dairy starts. Those guys are only in it for the money. Forget the money, you guys. We need to eat. We need to swim. Forget about the money and get those guys to another planet to put a dairy on the moon.
Thank you, caller. Thank you. We appreciate that perspective. And it brings up an important point, Bridget, as to if there are other people out there who share the concerns about water quality from this particular proposed facility, you know, how can they – what avenues are there to improve the project and lessen the potential impact?
Well, I think the point that she made, you know, when she raised the issue about the resorts that are nearby, is that's the whole issue. You can't get something that is so toxic so close to the water. I mean, there are pastures and inland acreages on the island and more acreage. So I think moving it to another area where it's not going to be so close and so much right there to do its damage. So move it to a safer area and keep those cows on more land. They have to pay a higher lease payment maybe, but, you know, if they have more land, as Professor Kranz taught me, then you have a better spreading of the manure, something the ground can handle, because we talked about the manure breaks down, you know, after a couple days. It changes the chemical composition. It gets higher in phosphorus, higher in nitrate. That's a problem that they have in New Zealand. They actually have their soils so high in nitrate and phosphorus that their cows are starting to get sick from the grass grown in it. So it is a cycle, like Don was talking about. It is, you know, the cows eat it, the cows make the milk, the cows poop. The land is affected, so if you don't have enough land to spread this stuff out over to be safely absorbed, processed, and degrade, then the very product they're making is not going to be good.
Yeah, so and we have lots and lots of open, relatively unused agricultural land on Kauai still. Fortunately, that's good for us.
Yes, it is good for us. I mean, because of the attractiveness of the ocean, most of Kauai is not far from the shore.
Right.
But inland there are, and I really, when I started looking at this, I thought, are they just there to get close to a roadway? Are they wanting to soothe the cows at night with the sound of the ocean? I mean, you know, I don't know what the motivation is, because they went to New Zealand. They said they studied the New Zealand model. They modified it. they're doing it in a more intense fashion here than is done in New Zealand. But if they studied it, why didn't they include in any of their presentations the fact that New Zealand has a big problem, and nationwide they're taking steps now to try to clean up the problem? I found it very unsettling that they didn't disclose that, and I think a responsible corporation about to run a business is really being deceitful if they come to you and say, we've been there. This country is successful in their production of milk. We've studied their model and we're putting it in. And then out of the other side of their mouth, they kind of keep it closed. They keep quiet about the fact, oh, and they have a real problem in their backyard, but we don't need to talk about that. So I think that it would have been much more prudent for them, more pono, to go down there and truly study it, figure out the fix, and come back and say, milk production is really high, but they've had a serious problem, but here's what we're going to do to make sure it doesn't happen here.
That's
in other
right.
words, have the fix all worked out when they make their presentation. But at all of their presentations and in all of the documents, we could find that they had filed with the reviewing bodies the fact of the problem or a fix for the problem. That's nowhere. It's just under the rug somewhere. It's hiding. And that's not Pono.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the take-home, one of the take-home messages might be that we need to, as we promote agriculture on our ag lands, which we have a lot of since the plantations went down, you know, we need to make sure that there's a review process that promotes the sustainability and protects our nearshore waters and fresh
That's
waters,
right.
Because all ag is not necessarily equal. And intensive industrial scale agriculture comes with environmental ramifications. So as we promote this, we need to make sure that we protect those other resources at the same time.
That's right. Yeah, for an example, there are agricultural sustainability assessments that can be done on the design of a project. The ability to reach sustainability is all in the design. The more time you design it and the better you research the subject, the better chance you can truly design a